Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out. I'm Billy Allen.
I'm Niels Nielsen.
And I'm John Mayer. And today we are excited to have Kevin Barnett joining us on the show. Kevin played his college volleyball at Pierce College and Pepperdine University. He went on to play in two indoor Olympic games in 2000 and 2004. And he's also done the TV broadcasting in the past three Olympic games. He's also host of our bitter rival, the podcast, The Net Live. Thanks for joining us, Kevin.
Yeah, it's like Anchorman between us. We're going to go out and all of a sudden you'll have brass knuckles in your hand. Won't know where they came from.
Yeah, that got out of hand really fast. So before we get into our topic, can you update us on what's been going on with The Net Live?
Well, hey, pleasure to be here. Thanks very much for having me. It's my second podcast of the day because we just did a Net Live this morning. Myself and Rich Lamborn holding down the fort solo, no guests today. And what's been going on with the show? We're just kind of gearing up for summer. We're pushing this summer to get out to more events and be at more events and have sort of a footprint that we haven't had before and go down on Saturdays and Sundays locally and promote the show and try and grow the listenership. We find that even 8 years in, people don't know that there's a show all about volleyball. They don't even know that it exists. So it's kind of our big push this year.
They don't even know what a podcast is.
That's true. Boy, you think back 8 years to when we started and people really didn't know what a podcast was.
Awesome. Well, today's topic, how do I put this? We have a title of going from a selfish to a selfless player. Now, this could be hearsay, but this topic kind of started when we had Reed Pretty on, and he mentioned that maybe earlier in your career, your mindset might have been a little different than it was at the end. He mentioned at one point, first thing you do after a match is to check the stats to see how well you did. Is that the case? Is this just slander?
Well, first of all, Reed Pretty is a hack. Just never done anything in the sport. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, I actually just last week read the part of Reed's book that talks about me. He kept telling me, you got to read it. You're in it. So in old Barnett fashion, I scanned it just to find my name. Because I didn't have time to read the whole book yet. I'm going to read his whole book. I enjoyed the little snippets as I was scanning. But, yeah, I still love stats, and I always have. And certainly when I was younger, it was more about my stats necessarily than about anyone else's stats or how the team had played. It never went over to, I don't care if we won or lost. I just want to know my stats. I wanted to win every time, and I figured the best way to win was to set me every single time. That was my thinking. But it was definitely not a team mindset and not a lot of the stuff that Reed talks about, a lot of the stuff that is talked about on the national team today, and a lot of the focus of kind of sports psychology and the development of that field.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was working for you. You were playing on the national team, so your process wasn't all bad, obviously. Were there any advantages or any ways in which having, I guess, more of a selfish mindset was helpful in your success?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you don't let – for me, I played catch-up the whole time because I didn't come to the sport until I was 18. I was – you know, we just talked about this morning, that I came to the sport in February of 92 or March of 92. And then I joined the national team in June of 97. So I knew nothing about volleyball before 1992. And I came to California and I started playing on the beach at Marine Street and trying to get games. And I had this goal of becoming a professional player, but I was not of that level. So I played with the old guys, some of these guys I still see around town now, which is awesome. And then I occasionally got games with some better guys. And a lot of people would tell me, you'll never make that happen. You know, they're getting pissed at me. So I was playing catch up the whole time. So the focus was always on what can I do to get better? How can I get better? I could have made three more plays. I could have made four more plays. So that's what I mean. When it wasn't about the stats, it was about winning, but it was a focus on how could I do something physically, kill another ball, dig another ball, block another ball, serve another ace to get another point for my team. But all wrapped in what am I doing to make that happen. And I think that's why I had that attitude for so long, is because I could not play the game, even on the national team for a long time. I could not play volleyball. I could overpower the game, but as far as technical expertise, the way the Italians play it, the way people who grow up playing it play it, I couldn't do that until I was 27, 28 years old.
And during this time, were you obsessed with more the flashy things? Like, you're thinking, okay, how can I get more kills? Or would you even look at stats like, oh, how am I passing? Or more of the intangibles, did that matter to you?
Oh, yeah. The passing mattered. Yeah, the whole thing mattered to me, because I became an outside hitter at Pepperdine with no experience passing the ball whatsoever. And it was the first year of overhand passing. First year it was ever allowed. And I remember some early posting board guy putting up a picture of Darth Vader, because you couldn't do Photoshop back then, but putting up a picture of Darth Vader and saying that was Mark Dunphy ruining the game by playing Kevin Barnett at outside hitter. And letting him stand on the 10-foot line and handle everything overhand, including the occasional jump serve, because I just didn't have a platform. So on the one hand, you had Dane Blanton, who played for Pepperdine right before I did. Then you had me. We were on polar opposites of passing ability with a platform. So I valued those things. I just wasn't very good at them. And I don't think I was very good at being uncomfortable. And so I would look at that and I would work at that all the time. But that was not the focus of how I valued my performance necessarily. You know, it was more about kills and aces, because that's what I was good at.
So, Kevin, I'm curious, maybe you could talk a little bit about how having such a self-focus was detrimental to your game, or maybe hindered your progress at your team. Do you have any examples of that?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. It was good for me in terms of skill development, because I would play all the time. There was nothing I wouldn't do. I would lift. I would. My whole focus was getting better at the game. And I would get pissed at guys who would drink all weekend and party and come in and Monday and Tuesday, they were garbage. And there were a couple of older guys on the team that were like that at that time. And for me, it was all about volleyball. I didn't care. I valued my whole person with how I was performing in volleyball, which doesn't work out after a while either. And we can get into that at some point, because that's having a family and having other priorities will make you change as a person. I would say the negative to the way I approached the game and the way that I played plays out fairly well with a guy by the name of Mike Lambert, who people may or may not have heard of. He was pretty good indoors and pretty good on the beach. But Mike, and the way that he approached the game and life and I think everything, I think Mike was a little ahead of me in maturity. And I would play every point in practice and every point in a match the same, and as though it was football. And I was out there, I'm from Chicago, like a Dick Butkus, Mike Singletary kind of a thing. I wanted to rip your head off. And that was the way I played the game. If I hit you in the face, I wanted to hit you in the face the very next time. I still to this day don't like when people apologize for hitting someone in the face, because as far as I'm concerned, I'll step back and I want to hit you again. And I want to hit you in the face until you end up on the bench. And I could care less. And that was the mentality that I brought to the game, the intensity that I brought to the game. And so that kind of thing does not work really well for teammates in practice. it has its balance. You know, you can be a competitor, you can have the intensity, and still have concern for and awareness of your teammates' feelings and the way that they approach the game and the value that they bring to the team. And I think that's where that was lacking for me. It gets encapsulated a few years later in the change. I'm playing against Jim Polster, who for a lot of people can be one of the more irritating people to play against. And I love Jim. And I blocked Jim straight down in some drill. And he came down and he said, you know, F you, Barney. And I said, well, F you, Polster. And we both started laughing, because it carried that same intensity, but it didn't carry the personal side of things, which really my fault and other people's fault is the reason why that 2000 team sucked when it came to pressure time in the Olympic Games. It got too personal, and it was not a good team of people. Highly talented group, but not a good team.
I kind of want to dig into that a little bit. Can you go into more detail on maybe some of the dynamics that were plaguing that team? Because it sounds like maybe there were some really talented, self-focused guys like yourself, but why doesn't that work together, especially in a sport like volleyball?
Because as soon as it gets tough, everyone goes inward. And as soon as it gets tough, if you're just by yourself facing a quality team on the international level, a team like Yugoslavia or Italy, it all goes downhill because you're chipping and chirping at each other rather than still working toward a common cause. And if you're all still working toward a common cause, no matter the result, you can all fight together. And win or lose, you did what you could for yourself and for your teammates all at the same time. That works. But when you splinter apart and you start picking at each other and stuff from practice and stuff from the Christmas exchange and stuff, you start to see things that happen that certainly were indicative of or were part of and created, helped create the problem and the splintering. I mean, I think back to the Christmas exchange. We did that year, we were not allowed to go overseas, and so we're all home at Christmas. And we went over and had a party at one of the guys' houses that had a few guys in it. And we get to the end of this white elephant exchange, which is supposed to be fun and you know, exchange gifts and steal gifts and so on. And there's an extra present under the tree. And one of the players is telling one of the other players, open it. You got to open it because it's addressed to a certain guy. And with leaving the names off of it, this guy didn't smell the best out of everybody in the gym. And it was known. And this guy, this other guy who was telling him to open it, he was so excited. And the guy who had the body odor issue opened it, and it was a bar of soap. And it's just not cool. Like, that's so far beyond anything funny, anything that has mutual respect and humor in it. And I think that's where that team got to. It got past the point of mutual respect and understanding for what everyone in different ways could bring to that team. And everyone went into their silos and it became personal. And I forever have faulted myself in getting sucked into that and everyone on that team. And that's why when we lost to Argentina in the opening match of the 2000 Olympic Games, a team we had beaten 15 straight times, from there it was straight down. And we went 0-5. And it was an embarrassment for the number three ranked team in the world. And I think you can even trace it further back if you want to World Championships or World Cup when we had to beat Korea and Canada to qualify and we couldn't do it because it got a little tough. And that team just didn't do well with tough because we didn't do well with each other.
Wow.
So if you could get in your DeLorean and go back to 1999 or 1998 and do something differently, what would it be?
I would not get sucked into hating my job because I loved volleyball when I showed up. Even with all the stuff that, you know, I mentioned about me and the pressures and being kind of a self-focused guy, I loved to play. I enjoyed the game. And that group, that, and the staff is in on the whole thing, that whole group, because the staff and the team are one thing, made me hate my job. And it took me a while to get back to where I really love my job. And I had to go on a personal journey of being injured and being out of the game and to come all the way back and enjoy my job. And it seems stupid to hate a job where you get paid to play volleyball. And at the time, you get paid plenty. It's not what it is today, but it was plenty. And I should never have hated my job. I hated warming up, which is stupid. it took me a long time to get back to that. So I would not let myself get sucked into not enjoying the game. And I would value my teammates and learn more about my teammates off the floor and away from just talking about volleyball.
John, this is really fascinating to me because we so often don't get to dive into some of the bumps in the road like this. So I'm curious a little bit about the maybe some of the leaders that you looked up to at the time. And what their role was, what was it about them that you looked up to, and then maybe some of the missteps that they made or lack of leadership. I'm curious about the leadership dynamic.
Bet you're still talking about the late 90s?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if you're okay talking about it.
Yeah. I don't know that I looked up to anybody, honestly, certainly not on that team. It wasn't like I was enamored with who people were. I think there was a lot of fighting, you know, coming out of the 96 games. That was not a good team either. I don't think we had a good example of leadership. I wasn't there. I watched a little bit of it on TV, and I kind of saw what came out of that into the gym in 1997 in Colorado Springs. And, of course, the program moved from San Diego to Colorado Springs, which people were unhappy about. And from the beginning, my attitude was, you don't like it here? Then go home. Get out of here. And there are two or three people who make the 2000 team that needed to not be there because they were just not happy. And that – I don't care how good a volleyball player you are. If you're not happy, here's the door. And I think you see that now with certainly with John. If you're not gonna enjoy your job and you're not gonna do things the way they want it done, you saw at UCLA, here's the door. Whether you want it or not, good luck. You know, it might even be a moon door. I haven't been to John's office, but there might be a moon door. And Brad Keller could play the role of the son there going, throw him through the moon door.
You know, John's never seen Game of Thrones.
I want to see him fly. Yeah.
That's not a Back to the Future reference. So I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah, I was impressed. More current, man. More current.
John, any pop culture reference from John is progress.
Talk some Seinfeld.
Yeah, Seinfeld, no problem. We can talk Seinfeld. Okay. Yeah, I don't think I looked up to anybody, and that was a problem. And I don't think there was anybody there who really was a leader. They anointed a couple people, but I don't think they had good leadership skills at the time. And not to be all negative about everything that went on, but these are certainly in retrospect the issues that I think cost us when the chips were down in 2000, when you get off to a bad start. When you have to play good teams in the pool. I mean, Yugoslavia made us look like a junior college team. No disrespect to my career or John's. It made us look terrible. And that experience, I think, soured people to this day for some of them, I think. I don't know that some of them have ever gotten over it. The only thing that got me over it, it took until 2004 when I got home. I came back from the 2004 games where I played with some of the same guys. I was certainly a far different person. And I'll never forget this. I looked at my ID from the games and I came back to my house and I took it out of my bag and I was going to just put it away. And I looked at the ID and I thought, man, that looks like the same picture. I hadn't noticed. I think they used the same stock picture from the previous Olympic games 4 years earlier. So I rummaged around and I found my ID from Sydney. I don't know where it was, but it wasn't out. And I looked at two and go, man, that's the same picture. And I had them in my hand and I thought, it's okay. Now it's okay. I never recognized how upset I was about that experience, about how disappointed I was in myself and in what went on in that experience in 2000 until after 2004. I never really dealt with it. And in fact, I know my season overseas after the games, I washed my hands of it saying, well, I didn't get to start and I didn't play very much. So it's not my problem, not my result. And that's indicative of where I was. That's indicative of where that team was. And it's totally the wrong attitude at the time. But it took me 4 years, more than 4 years to finally have a little catharsis about it and go, it's okay now.
So I think you're touching on a pretty big point because I know, myself included, maybe not quite to that extreme, but I've coached a lot of players as well who have that self-focus that it seemed like you had. And even though they can be intense and it can be a very good thing for the team, at some point, like you're talking about, there's that ceiling. So I guess my question is what was it that made it okay, that gave you that moment of self-reflection to maybe start change? Was it something somebody said? Was it an exercise that you did? What exactly was the process involved in making it okay?
Well, I was already far different by the time I kind of dealt with it there. I was already a far different person, player, teammate. And I don't recommend this plan for everybody. I don't know that it's the right path. If you're say 22 years old or 21 years old, and you're thinking, boy, this is a little bit of me, and how can I change this around? But having kids did it. And having to deal with my first son, who I think he cried for 6 months, it made going to practice an escape from everything that was going on at home, all the pressures of everything at home. And not that I didn't want to be there, but it was far less stressful to be in the gym and to be playing Olympic volleyball than it was to be at home taking care of, by the time the 2000 games or the 2004 games roll around, two kids. And that changed me, in addition to being hurt and having volleyball taken away from me for all intents and purposes for 18 months and going through an odyssey that eventually would end my career with knee issues, but would not have made me the same person I was in 04 had I not suffered that, suffered through that. So I think those two things made me a better teammate, a better person, and a better volleyball player. And that paid off in 2004. So I don't know that that's the route you need to go out and have kids with somebody. But certainly those kinds of life changes make your job, your professional sport, it puts it more in perspective. It gives you an idea of the privilege that it is to put on that uniform, to go to practice every day, to get to hit a ball and have everything be focused from the trainers to the coaches to the travel staff to the office to making sure that you have what you need to be successful.
That's awesome. Well, once you kind of, you know, had kids, had the catharsis moment, and kind of made the decision to focus more on the team and that common cause, what steps did you take? What was different? Like, were there any changes you made in practice, dealing with other players, or, like, I don't know, what are some steps we can take to have that more common cause focus?
I could still be intense and still have fun. I could give you maximum effort on every ball, which, by the way, I think is what carried me with coaching staffs, because I was kind of a handful in the way I've described from 1992 to 2003, for about 10 years. But what always carried me was that I think with coaches, if you talk to them, they knew every day that you brought me into practice, I gave you everything I had. I didn't hold back. I hadn't been out drinking. I wasn't somehow compromised. I was coming in to kill somebody that day. And that has value on a team. That has value to a staff. So I think I gave a lot of value on that side of things. And I was able to continue to bring that along with having fun, because it should be a fun job. You should be able to be in there and be intense and give maximum effort on every play without screwing around. It's not screwing around to be having a good time, to be enjoying what you do, to enjoy the great plays of your opponents in practice, who are your teammates, to recognize greatness and move on. You know, sometimes you get beat. Okay, no problem. And for me, I had let go of the individual points, the individual plays. They didn't really matter anymore. Because people would ask me, how's your body feeling? And I would say, this is leading into 2004. And I would say, you know, I made it through practice today, and I'm hoping to make it through practice tomorrow. That's about as far as I've gotten. And to take it down and strip away all the worry, the self-doubt, the lack of self-confidence associated with competing for every point and valuing myself based on every single point, made it so that I could have a good time in practice. And if somebody hit a ball by me or stuffed me straight down or whatever, it wasn't the end of the world. I was still fiery a little bit and certainly gave it all, but it wasn't like I would take it out on or make it some personal fight because I got blocked, which is something I would have done when I was younger. So I would say, if you're a young player or you're a coach, what you're trying to do is take away the stress of every single point. Doesn't matter. What's your overall goal? Is your overall goal to start? Is your overall goal to win? Is your overall goal to get better at passing or get better at hitting or do something? Be okay with being uncomfortable to get better, and be okay with it not working out on every single play.
What was your overall goal at that point? Did you have something defined in your mind?
I wanted to go to the Olympic Games again, and I wanted to start. And I didn't, but I couldn't control those things. And I worried for a long time about stuff I couldn't control. You know, I'd get upset about travel arrangements. I'd get upset about being on the bus too long or not getting fed at the right time, whatever. Man, I was a freaking handful. I let go of that stuff. And I, whatever, we're traveling. You know, you fly into Miami on the way to Brazil and your next flight is canceled and you don't have any of your luggage. Of course it is. this is what we do. You know, you travel around the world without your stupid luggage. That's just the way USA Volleyball does it. You get up at 4 a.m. to fly from Colorado Springs to Denver, from Denver to Dallas, and then watch your airplane go from Dallas to Tokyo, but fly right back over where you were 6 hours ago on the map. Like, oh, look, we're back to square one. I got up at 4 a.m. It's now 2 in the afternoon. You know, that's just what you do, and let go of that stuff. You can't control it. Who cares? And I even, you know, everybody's got to remind themselves sometimes with what I do now. Sometimes I get wrapped up in some particular situation. Need to just go, whatever, and turn on a movie and move on.
So, Kevin, speaking on this topic, we did some research and dug up some dirt on you before this interview. Rich Lamborn wanted to ask about quoting the FIVB guidelines to Doug Beal in the Frankfurt airport. He says it's the first time he understood how gnarly you were at holding your ground, being educated, and speaking eloquently about your argument. So what happened
yeah.
there?
So this is Rich's favorite story, and I didn't realize at the time it left such a mark on the young guys. We come out of 2000, I come back in 2001, and I'm the veteran guy. Myself and Hoff and Sullivan are kind of the veteran guys. We bring on a whole bunch of young guys, including Rich. And the whole first year is kind of it's just a struggle, man. It's just a freaking struggle because none of these guys are ready to play on the international stage. And I remember, I'll get to that story, but just to give you an idea of kind of where we were, we were playing against the B team, a collegiate B team in practice. It's a practice match. We lose the match. And then assistant coach Brad, his last name's escaping me all of a sudden. Not Brad. I see Brad Keller's who I deal with now, but it wasn't him. I'll think of it. Anyway, our assistant coach is lamenting the fact that we lost these guys. These college guys, you can't lose to them. These are just college players and so on and so. So I piped up and said, hey, we are those guys. Look at these guys. You know? There's a few of us that have been here for a while, but these guys just got here too. It's the same team. You can't berate us for having the same guys and losing to some college dudes. These guys just got out of college. So that was kind of where we were at as a team. And we go to play in World League. Brad Sandin, by the way, just jumped into my head.
I knew
Brad
you'd get
Sandin.
It.
Yeah, he don't get me started on that, but we could talk about assistant coaches and their value.
I hope he's not a listener.
I don't care if he is, and I'm not generally mean to folks just to be mean, but man, they read his resume when he left the team after 2 years. They read his resume off or listed it or whatever when they had his retirement thing. And my comment was, I wish he brought any of that to our team. Because they asked me, are you going to his thing today? He's leaving. I said, no, I don't celebrate mediocrity. So there was a bit of me still left in 2001, 2002. There was a bit of that still left. And, you know, if you're not good at your job, you're not good at your job. And then what was even crazier and worse for my vision of Brad was we then got Hugh as an assistant coach who possessed some intangibles as a person that took the edge off and help practice be competitive and co-opetition. You know, that made it that. And Hugh, for all the great things he's done since, he had some of that stuff in him, and he was a terrific assistant coach. And so to have someone that I did not value and did not get anything from for 2 years, and then to have Hugh, who I thought was tremendous, was really bad for my view of Brad. You don't want to be followed by greatness if you're already disliked. So anyways, that's where we were. World League, we start World League, and this actually involves Brad Sandin as well, because Doug is sitting us down, this young team. It's me and Hoff and a bunch of young guys, maybe Greg Romano, in Germany. And he wants a greater share of the per diem, because if you win, you get $400 for a win. If you lose, you get $200 for a loss in cash right after the game. I think the tax limitations have long expired. So you get this cash and you have a successful weekend. You win two matches, you get $800 in your pocket in cash per guy. So it was terrific. Well, Doug hatches a plan to start to share that per diem with the coaches, saying it's not fair that the players get the per diem and the coaches do not. And he starts in with, we're all in this together, and we should be in this together and share in this together. And he goes on for a few minutes. And to hear Rich tell it, Rich says, I had my wallet out, and I was ready. I had the bills coming out of my wallet, and Barnett stepped over and said, put that away. And Hoff put him in a headlock or something. I don't know. And I felt like, you're a coach. You have a year-round job. You're signed to a contract for a whole year. You're guaranteed that money. You stay in the States. We have to go overseas and play. I just got back 7 days before we went on this trip from Austria, where I've been for 6 months slogging it out in some crappy league. And you drive a BMW Z3 that's brand new. I don't care if you can't handle the payments. You signed on for that contract. It says in the rules, the players get the money. The players get the money. Because you had to fight and claw USA Volleyball for every $50 on your contract every year. And I listened to 1 year where I had a terrific year, and they told me, oh, no, it's based on how long you've been here. This is how we're doing it. It's how long you've been here. Your salary goes up. It's not really performance-based. Okay, fine. I relented as an idiot at 23. Well, the next year wasn't such a good year, and I got told, well, you're not really performing that well, so we can't really pay you anymore. So I'd been through that back and forth. So there was no way in hell I was giving up a dollar that I didn't have to give up. And in retrospect, that's a leftover from that kind of IGM, I got mine mindset. I still don't think it's right. I still stand by that opinion, but I could have expressed it perhaps in a more friendly manner for the coaching staff than that. But I know it stuck out for the young guys that myself and Tom were having none of that conversation.
I love it. Well, that's great. We do have some random questions here that we're going to do, but I have one follow-up question. I'm just wondering about advice for young players that aren't necessarily in a situation where they can have kids to make themselves less self-focused.
Yeah. Appreciate the fact that your teammates are doing everything they can to have success on the floor. And even if they aren't, it's your job as a teammate to try and do everything you can to make sure that you're all having success toward a common goal of winning. And go into it with that understanding that everyone's doing their best. And I say this to kids now, and I think back to myself and go, well, if they only knew. I coach basketball and football, and some kid will chirp in on some other kid, and I'll say, listen, he's doing his best. You do your best, and that'll be fine. You don't need to tell him about what he's supposed to do. That's my job. You can encourage him, and you recognize the fact that he is working for the team. And so I think as a self-focused player, you need to come to the realization that everyone is working toward a common goal, whether they're successful or not, is not the point. The question is, are they giving it all that they have? Because the result of the point does not matter. It's only a reflection of what you're doing. It's when I, like now when I have discussions about what I make broadcasting and the fact that I want to make more and I want to do more and I want to be further. And somebody said, well, you're already doing fine. I said, yeah, I know. It's not about the money. It's about a measuring stick. It's about this shows the value of what it is that I'm putting out, that I'm putting out good work. And with that's just the reward. And in sports, if you're putting out good work, if you're doing the right things, the reward is the scoreboard. That scoreboard will go in your favor if you are over time doing the right things for yourself, for your teammates. The scoreboard's the reward, not the focus. The focus is, what am I doing to make myself better, and how am I helping my teammates maximize what they're doing? The scoreboard is just a bonus. The stats are just a bonus. I still love stats. I still look them up. I love doing it with, I enjoy a good 30 kill performance because it's so rare now, or 25 kills in men's volleyball. I enjoy a good stat line, a Micah Ma'a stat line last year. Crazy stuff. But that's just the reward. That's just the reflection of, are you doing the right things with you and your teammates? And you have to value people around you. And I would say you don't have to like them. This is an important thing too for players. You don't have to like the guy next to you. You have to respect the guy next to you. You have to respect what he's bringing and what he's offering and what he's doing for your team and for the collective goal. The 2000 team did not respect one another. They needed that. You don't have to like everybody.
Kevin, just being around, I guess, and kind of seeing what they're doing on both national teams, men and women these days, I just want to know, I guess, what are some of the best things you see going on there than that wasn't going on when you started, whether it's with, I guess, the culture of the teams, through the coaches, or just player leadership? Are there any things that stand out that you think are just attributing to their success?
Man, I want to play now. I wanted to play for Hugh. I want to play for John. I would love to be in the gym. I would love to be me in the gym now, not me back then. I guess that's the curse of age and the curse of some self-reflection, is that you realize what a nut you were earlier. I guess that's growth. What do I really like? I like that there is an awareness of the sports psychology aspect of things. There's an awareness of the effect that you have on your teammate. There's a continual push by the coaching staff to get players to understand that. And there's plenty of problems still. I still hear about stuff that's an issue between guys, or so-and-so is hard to deal with, or whatever. There's always going to be issues that will always be present. The question is, are you making progress? How are you dealing with them? Are you putting them together in a way that makes sense? And I think that bringing in somebody like Ken Revizza, bringing in people like Andrea Becker, bringing in those that are aspiring to produce greatness in general, in people, that then will translate to the volleyball court. I think that's a really nice push, and I'm glad that kids are even getting that sometimes in high school or in college if they're in the right situation. Because I don't know that I was ready for it. I don't know that I would have listened. But over time, I think you get people and you get them to buy in. And I think that push has been really good for the game, for the national teams. It was really good for the bronze medal matches, because that is a terrible situation that both teams were in. Almost identical situations this summer, where they were going 95 to 99% of the time. The result was the U.S. wins and they go to the gold medal match and they play for that ultimate goal. Instead, both teams ended up losing that semifinal. And then you have to come back 48 hours later and you have to figure out how to put it back together. And I've been in that situation and we lost the bronze medal. But we were in a little different situation, that we got thumped out of the semifinal. It wasn't like we had a chance. These guys and women in the last Olympics, they owned that semifinal. It was theirs. So that I think showed the mettle of those teams. That showed the togetherness of those teams, the ability to come back and rally from that type of 4-year journey that was about to end in catastrophe, and come back with performances that got them a win to end the Olympic Games and end that Olympic cycle.
Good stuff, Kevin. Thanks a lot for sharing all this. We have a couple of random questions that we'll close with. So we were both lucky enough to play for two legendary coaches in Ken Stanley, Big Daddy, at Pierce College, and Marv Dunphy at Pepperdine. What did you learn from them in your experience playing for them?
God, did you have another hour? I mean, what did I learn from them? You know, both of those guys, as good of volleyball coaches as they are, as accomplished volleyball coaches as they are, they're better men than they are coaches. They're better people than they are coaches. And I know Big Daddy doesn't know what a podcast is, and I know he's not listening. And I hope he was listening the other night when I got on the junior college broadcast for the last little bit of the third set. I hope he was tuning in. Somebody got it on the computer, maybe one of his daughters or something. But I would like to just say thanks to them. I tell people I went in 5 years from nothing to the national team. And yeah, I did a lot of work. I was willing to do things and get through bumps along the way. But I was fortunate. I was lucky that I ended up where I did. And I got to play for Ken Stanley and for Marv Dunphy. And those two men, they were willing to tolerate the things I would do on the court because they got to know me off the court and figured out that I wasn't a bad guy. I was playing a certain way, and I was young, immature, had some growing up to do. And I think that their ability to recognize and deal with that and still keep me in the program and keep giving me opportunities and helping me grow as a player and as a person on my own timeline with their advice, I think that was important for me. And if I didn't play for those two guys, maybe it would have been a different career. Well, I know it would have been different. I don't know that it would have gone as far as it did if I had played for somebody else.
Cool. And Kevin, you played a few different positions. I know you played middle and then outside hitter. What helped in your transition? And I guess just advice for players trying to make changes position-wise and also for the coaches listening, kind of how to help make those changes possible.
I think as you grow, you have to reevaluate where you're at. I played opposite, then I played middle. And then in the same season, I played middle as though I was an opposite. And then internationally, I played outside hitter or opposite, depending upon the year, if I could pass or not. And I finished at outside hitter. So I think coaches have to be willing to take a look at players and see where they're at and know and not maintain a certain vision of a player, especially at the younger ages, because the kids are so different in just 3 months, in just 2 months, in just 6 months. They change so much, whether they're growing or they're figuring out the locomotion of hitting a ball or figuring out serving or figuring out passing or whatever it is. I think you have to keep an open mind as a coach to what a kid is doing now and not let it be tainted by what a kid has been doing before. On the player side of things, get in there and work. Ask for extra reps. You see so many kids transferring now or their parents come in demanding playing time. You know, get in there and work. I would come to practice every day and work. And yeah, I was bitter. My now wife was my poor girlfriend in junior college, my first year when I was riding the bench and being the serving sub. And I'd have started on any other team in the state, but we had a really good team, and I shouldn't have been starting. But you're damn right, I thought I should be starting. So she got to deal with me after every match when I didn't play. I just came in to serve. And you know, you have to deal with stuff that I wouldn't say to Big Daddy because I was too scared. And stuff that I would say to her. But it never stopped me from coming back and working the next time, the next ball, the next play. My solution to if I got blocked was I'm going to hit the ball harder. And if you block me again, I'm going to hit it even harder the next time. I don't know that that's the right solution, but it'll sure keep you coming back. I think that's the players need to just come and work. Shut your mouth about whether you should have playing time or not and let your playing do the talking. If you should be playing, eventually it will be so evident that you have to be out there that you will end up out there. And Gino Auriemma, I think, said basically something to that effect, probably better than me in a press conference this year, and you should look it up. You should look up that, and you should also look up the rant from the Wisconsin women's basketball coach. Get off the phones, you know, get off the Facebook, and get in the gym. Get your butt in the gym and go work. If you want to be good at this, then go work at it. And that's the message players need to get today. If you want to be good at something, and stop consuming crap on the internet. Turn it off and go play if that's what you want to do. If you want to sit and consume a bunch of crap on the internet, fine. That's what you're doing. You're consuming. You're not doing anything. Go out and do something, whether it's volleyball or making something or whatever it may be. Whatever you are into, go do it. Don't just watch someone else do it.
Unless it's a really good podcast, then you can do it.
Then you can listen. Yeah. Definitely listen while you're doing something.
Yeah. Kevin, I got one for you. So being the game has changed so much, even in your career, in your lifetime. I'm wondering, where do you see the game heading?
What really impressed me this year, particularly on the men's side, was the technical proficiency of the defense against awesome offense. Guys were making digs, making reads, in spots, controlling the ball at a level that I think is beyond where it's been. And that goes across all the teams. I was really impressed. Where does the game go from here? It's a hard question to answer.
Well, because that's an interesting point that you make. Because I remember, it might have been 2008 or even before that, there was a talk about raising the net because the offensive proficiency was so high that it became a boring game. And now watching it recently, I felt the same way. So that's interesting. You saw that.
I think players have adjusted to the speed of the game. You know, Brazil was doing stuff circa 2000, 2004 that nobody else was doing in terms of the speed of the offense and how quickly the ball was getting out in front of the blockers. You as a middle blocker, you just had to guess. And if you didn't guess right, you were screwed because the ball was getting to the outside with such pace. It was just one up or one and a half up if the middle was just throwing his hands out there. So I think the defenses have adjusted to all that open net. I think the middle blockers have gotten a little quicker and better at reading the game because the demands have gotten higher. And I think that's been one of the big changes. I don't know how many more Matt Andersons you will see. That's been the push, is to have these giant outside hitters. And frankly, there just aren't the athletes. It's the same reason in basketball you don't have 6'11 point guards, except what's his name for the Bucks. You know, I think he plays for the Bucks, but the Greek guy. But you just don't have those special athletes. I think you might see a few more of those guys, and maybe that's the change, as you get a few more of those guys sprinkled in. But I think a lot of it's going to stay the same. Your typical outside hitter is 6'6", 210 pounds, jumps around 40 inches, and beats the living daylights out of the ball. And that's what that guy looks like. I harp on college players all the time. This is kind of a digression of my own, but I harp on college players all the time because I watch these guys play outside hitter and opposite in college. And I don't see a lot of guys who are going to go to the national team and make an impact. If you're a young player, you're a college player, you're somebody listening to this podcast and you're still actively playing and you have aspirations of a national team or a beach career, particularly internationally, do something really well. Give a coach an excuse to put you on the floor. It's nice that you can do all these well-rounded things. That's great. Be exceptional at something. Pick out something that you can really dominate at. I don't care if it's serving or blocking or hitting or digging, but do something to a level that is beyond everyone else. Then the rest will catch up. And I think a lot of these guys come from a system and things where they come out of college, they've had a lot of success, and I can go down a list of probably a dozen players that I played with or I've seen since. Yeah, you're a nice college player. You can pass the ball at a pretty high level. You can hit the ball at a pretty high level. You can block a little bit. You can serve okay. Come to the national team, you better beat the daylights out of the ball somewhere, or you better dig everything because it's still a power game. And I just worry about some of these guys coming to the national team, man. Get stronger. Hit the ball harder. Just get after the damn thing. Be angry with it. And give the coach an excuse to put you out there.
Nice. Kevin, final question. When we're not interviewing you, you are doing another little volleyball podcast where you guys talk about the kind of the news and the, I guess, state of affairs a lot. Can you give us just a quick state of the union for volleyball? I know we went through a lot of beach drama recently, but just give us some sound bites, kind of where's volleyball at right now?
The beach is in the midst of a cycle that I've seen before and that people that have been around for a while have seen maybe two times. It's a cycle of bankruptcy and either moral or financial in terms of how the people are approaching the game. And I hate to see it happening again. we had an article a couple weeks ago from 1998, and we read parts of it on the air, and we posted it on our Facebook page. And you can change the names, and you can change the dates, and the themes are the same. They're darn near identical. And it's sad
to watch the cycle repeat itself.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Yeah, and it's crazy to watch that happen. The disheartening thing to me about what went on Thursday with people signing or not signing and the AVP maybe not being today is that people even thought of killing the golden goose. Without Donald Sun involved, there is no domestic tour. There's one FIVB stop in the United States, and that is the extent of beach volleyball in America on a professional level. I like Albert. I like what he's doing. I like the NVL. If you saw an NVL tournament in the last 8 years, it's not to the same scale. It's not the same product. With Leonard involved, maybe it will be different. Leonard's events are certainly of that scale. Maybe Leonard has another event. So maybe there's two events without the AVP. But that's it. And until somebody figures out how to make money or get advertisers to buy in a way like they used to, which I don't have the answer. I wish I did, but I do not. You're not going to see a return to that. And you're going to need somebody like Donald who's willing to put up his own money. So I think the beach is in a precarious spot here in the United States in terms of its professional viability. The FIVB, for those that don't know, they've also brought over money from the indoor side of the game to fund the beach side of the game. And they lose events, they lose promoters, they gain events, they gain promoters. They cycle through some people. There are incredible events like the Swatch Major Series, where they put on, it's the most professional event I've ever seen from top to bottom. It's amazing. And I hope that model can find a way to exist and continue, can find a way to return money for sponsors, that model continues. Because it's when you go to that event, you feel like you are a professional player. You feel like you are at a professional sporting event. And I hope that they can continue to make that work. I hope that they can continue to grow that. On the indoor side, I think that it's remarkable what the United States has been able to do without a professional league, without players who play in a professional setting the way they do in clubs all over the world. To have the success that we've had at the international level is purely remarkable and a testament to the athletes and the coaches in this country that are teaching the game and teaching players coming out of college who are ill-prepared for the national team scene to make them ready for the international scene. And kudos to the college coaches who have been doing that with coaching their players up with increased ability over the last few years, because we've seen kids make the jump right to the national team and make a huge impact and play at that high level, whether it's Taylor Sander or Thomas Jeske or Aaron Russell. All those guys have been so good right out of college. That's a testament to what the coaching culture in the United States is doing. And that applies to the women, too, who have the deepest gym I've ever seen. And that's gone on for now two Olympic cycles, where you could play two teams and they might be in the top five, both of them. It's really amazing what collegiate volleyball is producing and what the national team is doing with those athletes. I think the future is nothing but bright, but incredibly interesting for both of those indoor teams over the next 4 years. I'll be interested to see the personnel changes that happen and the choices that get made by those coaches, because they have some choices. They have some players. And I think the state, in terms of talent on the indoor side, the state is good. On the beach, we need some young talent. We need some young players to step up. The men and the women, the top teams, are old people. They're in their mid to late 30s. Some of them going to be 40 plus by the time the next Olympics roll around. It's not necessarily a recipe for success. And in most cases, there's a pretty decent drop off between those folks and the rest. And hopefully you're going to see some young talent step up. Sarah Hughes and Kelly Clay is probably chief among the young names that everyone thinks of.
Nice. Well, appreciate that insight. I think you summed up everything pretty nicely. Are you going to be in Huntington?
I will not, because I'm going for the Men's Collegiate Championship. So I'll be down there Thursday at Huntington, cool, setting up the NetLive booth, getting all of our new banners and stuff up. And we'll have some folks down there handing out cards and trying to let folks know that the show is out there. We'll have Matt Gardhoff's daughter and her friends rolling around representing the NetLive. Should be a lot of fun. And we'll have a presence in that My Voice, and Jeremy and Rich and Nicole and everybody will have some episodes playing, so you'll be able to hear us. But all of us are doing other jobs. Jeremy will be spinning the tunes there and taking care of DJ duties. Rich will be coaching his teams. Nicole will be playing. Go ahead and check out her warm-up outfit that I just got her, her warm-up shirt. And I'll be in Columbus doing the men's indoor championship. So unfortunately, I can't come and hang out and promote the brand. I'd love to just hang out and talk to some fans.
Cool. Well, we'll be in the tent next to you in the Coach Your Brains Out tent, pumping our volume to 11 to compete.
now we all can really get out the clubs and the maces and everything and go at it.
Yeah, it's finally on.
Well, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. I'm glad you're doing a podcast and glad you're continuing to grow the game.
All right. Thanks, Barney.
Thanks, Kev. Thanks a lot. Kev.